Disc 2, Air Power, continuing on page 19. When I was young, I was many years ago, my mom and dad would always wish my siblings and me a good morning and ask how we slept. That may be a cultural thing, I don't know. First, they wanted to welcome us to another wonderful day. Second, they were sincerely interested that we'd had a good night's sleep. That was a great start to every day. We didn't have much, growing up, in materialistic terms, but we had all we needed in attitude. That's where, "Isn't this a great day?" started. I often hear people tell me, "Well, I'm not a morning person." Get over it. I think that's a cop-out for choosing a negative attitude. Imagine the power of developing a habit that puts you in a positive frame of mind at the start of the day. Do you think it might carry on the rest of the day? Do you think it might affect the people you lead? Try it, and then answer those questions. Try what? Think about the next couple of paragraphs. Although I chose Attitude is Everything as the subtitle for this habit, the title is Look Up. Keith D. Harrell, author of Attitude is Everything, has a new book called An Attitude of Gratitude. I'm a self-acknowledged hypocrite, so I'd like to practice that now. Although attitude is everything, gratitude is more. Okay, I'm going in circles. I like circles, especially when I'm in the right ones. Here's how I see it, and it is a circle. Your attitude will come from a sense of gratitude that will affect your attitude. If you're truly grateful for what you have, your attitude will reflect that, and it will affect everyone around you. The mother of Zig Ziglar, a motivational speaker, says, "When the outlook isn't good, try the uplook." In other words, look up. Search for meaning beyond you and above you. Your attitude will reflect your hope. Hope is a very powerful concept, particularly when you're leading troops. Your business is war, whether you like it or not. As a leader, your troops will often look up to you to gain their hope. When you provide it to them, they will excel because their attitude will be positive. Hope is like faith. You can't hold it in your hands, but you know when you have it and when you don't. Your troops do, too. It's interesting that we find hope in ourselves by having faith in something larger than we can possibly be. Find faith and hope and let them raise your attitude so that every one of your troops will say, "I'll go to war with that exceptionally powerful lieutenant, any day, any place." Major Chappie Wattis, my pastor and good friend, and I were sitting in Bosnia waiting for a plane to take us back to Germany. We're both philosophers, although he's much wiser than I. As we were sitting there analyzing the world around us, he told me, "Chief, there are two types of people in this world. Those who get up in the morning and say, 'Good morning, God,' and those who get up in the morning and say, 'Good God, morning.' Again, it's your choice. Attitude is contagious, and your troops will catch it from you. You choose. Be a thermostat. Choose a positive attitude. Be thankful for what you have. Share that gratitude with your troops. Stand beside them and help them look up and aim high." War Story. I'm at the Brandenburg Gate one cold and dreary October morning in Berlin, Germany. Okay, almost every morning is cold and dreary in Berlin, so what's new? I'm sitting in a bus full of enlisted Air Force bandsmen, waiting to march in the first-ever Unification Day parade. I'm serving as the drum major for the United States Air Forces in Europe, USAFE, band. The troops are restless. They're cold, and it's raining. You can probably understand how they feel only if you've been there. As troops sometimes do, they start to get rowdy. Some are tough enough to approach me and ask whether we can cancel our march because the cold, wet weather can negatively affect our instruments and our uniforms, which would cost a lot of money to replace. Any warrior would know the answer. Let me say that these are real warriors. It's just that after being out all night in Berlin, acting as American ambassadors of goodwill, of course, it's very difficult to think clearly first thing in the morning. Anyway, being the astute student of group dynamics that I am, I stand up and start trying to inspire the troops by telling them how important this parade is, politically and emotionally, not only to the German population, but also to the United States government. I was on, man. I could see morale growing with my every word. I finished my short yet very eloquent speech by saying, "It could be worse. It could be snowing." As I said that, their eyes changed as they looked beyond me. Someone pointed. I turned around to see that it was snowing. We still marched in the parade. My point is that regardless of how tough things get, they could always be worse. If they're not worse, be grateful for it. By the way, if you'd like to see a picture of that parade, go to the USAFE band's website. You have to look hard to see me, since I'm facing the band, but you can see the cold, wet troops marching proudly in front of the Brandenburg Gate. They represented you well after they adjusted their attitudes. Starting points. Isn't this a great day to be an American warrior? Have I acknowledged my troops' presence today? What am I truly grateful for? Am I being a thermostat today? Words of wisdom. A little spark kindles a great fire. Spanish proverb. Growth in wisdom may be exactly measured by decrease in bitterness. Friedrich Nietzsche. All I have seen teaches me to trust the Creator for all I have not seen. Ralph Waldo Emerson. That man is happiest who lives from day to day and asks no more, garnering the simple goodness of life. Euripides. He is rich that is satisfied. Thomas Fuller. The world is wide, and I will not waste my life in friction when it could be turned into momentum. Francis Willard. There are moments when everything goes well, but don't be frightened. Jules Renard. A successful man is one who can lay a firm foundation with the bricks others have thrown at him. David Brinkley. 4. Habit 4. Be careful. Take care of your troops. Man, I loved that guy. Well, actually, I still do. I worked with a general officer with whom I would still go to war without hesitation. If he called me this very minute and said, "Chief, I need you to go to Timbuktu with me," my only question would be, "When do you need me to be there, General?" I'd even accept his collect call. As much as I truly found it an honor to serve with him, he also frustrated the dickens out of me. He was never, and I mean never, on time. His wife is laughing her head off as she reads this, because she knows how bad he was about being late. She often said, "He'll be late for his own funeral." Let me tell you that he never intended to be late. Oftentimes, he got so deep in discussion with people, trying to help them out, that he'd forget he had another appointment. Remember, I told you this. When you become a general officer, you will continuously run from one appointment to the next. Unintentionally, the message my general sent to those whom he kept waiting was that he didn't respect their time. As hard as I tried to explain to audiences that he meant no disrespect, that's how they often took it. Know this. What you intend doesn't matter nearly as much as how others perceive your behavior. Perception is truth to the perceiver. If those you lead think you don't respect them, you'd better change your behavior because it's the only thing that will change their minds. Leadership guru John Maxwell says that followers have to buy into leaders before they buy into their vision. I believe that's true. How do leaders get people to buy into them? They have to show that they care. How can you show that you care? More on that in a minute. You may have heard the adage, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. The hard truth is that people do know how much you care by your attitude and what you're willing to do to help them empower themselves. If you care for them and treat them like winners, they'll live up to your expectations. On the other hand, if you treat them like dirtbags, they'll live up to your expectations. Caring is about the little things you do or don't do that express your concern for your troops, or your family for that matter. Don't worry. I'll write a book on exceptionally powerful families. I mentioned the little things in the last habit. To be careful means you have to be full of care. The subtitle of this habit, Take Care of Your Troops, is critical to your success. Exceptionally powerful lieutenants will show their troops that they care. You'll expect your troops to be on time, won't you? It's a matter of respect, isn't it? Here's the most powerful lesson in this book. To gain respect, you must give it. That's the only way you'll gain it. Trust me. What you give, you will get in return. That's the way of the world. If you respect your troops enough to be on time, they will do the same. Interestingly, one of the biggest issues we dealt with in that wing, led by my general, was on-time takeoffs. Could there have been a correlation? You decide. One of the most difficult things you will learn as a leader is that the cliché, it's lonely at the top, is true. So bring someone with you. If you expect to be an exceptionally powerful lieutenant, you'll have to be careful. You will also have to be careful not to get too close to the troops. Wait a minute, you say. First you tell me to take care of them, but now you're telling me to be careful of them. What's up with that? Here's what I mean. Who is accountable for the welfare of the troops and the accomplishment of the mission? You guessed it. It's you. Do you think that those two elements may come into conflict at any time? Man, you're smart. Surely you've heard the old adage, take care of your troops, and they will take care of the mission. That statement is also true. Taking care of the troops has much to do with nurturing an environment conducive to growth. Being careful means holding your troops accountable so that they can grow and mature into better leaders themselves. How you do that is critical to your success as a leader. It often requires a different approach for every person you lead. When he was commander of USAFE, General John Jumper used a term that captures what I'm getting at. The term was tough love. I'm not sure who found it tough when it came to holding people accountable. Let me go back to my general for an example. He was the best leader I ever worked with. His expectations were high, but I always knew what they were. When he first took command, he sent out printed pamphlets of what he expected from his wing. He was easy to follow because we all knew what he expected. Anyway, I recall that he asked me, "You don't really order chiefs," to do something. I agreed and went out to do it. Sometime later, I had to come back to him and tell him that I had failed. Yes, yes, even chiefs fail, but only once. I felt terrible that I hadn't been able to accomplish what he'd asked me to do. Evidently, he saw my frustration. After I explained to him what had happened, or hadn't happened, he looked me in the eye and said, "It won't happen again, will it, Chief?" Of course, my answer was, "No, sir." "Thanks," he said. I'm sitting there, waiting to be admonished. "Yell at me, man. Hit me. Do something." He just said, "Thank you," and dismissed me. That was the toughest admonishment I'd ever gotten. You see, he knew I didn't need any more than that. He knew I'd kick my own butt better than he could. Do you see why I'd go to war with that man any day, any place? The point is that you have to know how to take care of your troops in a way that will help them grow and fulfill the mission. You have to be flexible in how you do that, because your troops will respond differently to everything that happens to them in their lives. There is no cookie-cutter method for leading people. You have to show them you care, but at the same time, you must separate yourself from them enough to be able to do what you need to do. That takes discipline. All of this sounds confusing, doesn't it? Discipline is a word that we often use in a negative way. You can do that, and you'll get negative results. You'll think they're positive results because you may see immediate changes, but in the long term, they will be negative. Let me explain. Here's one of several definitions of discipline: punishment intended to correct or train. Now, is punishment a word that will get you positive results? If you answer yes, call me. You need help. We think of discipline as punishment, and it can certainly be that if you so choose. But the root word of discipline is disciple, one who embraces and assists in spreading the teachings of another. Now we're getting into a positive tone, aren't we? Effective discipline comes from caring. Have you ever been to a gathering where promotions were announced? Remember the reactions of the troops when their new leader was introduced? "Ladies and gentlemen," the MC announces, "I give you your new leader, Lieutenant Bag O'Donuts." The troops say nothing. The hush is deafening. Do you think there was much discipline or discipleship in that unit? I don't think so. On the other hand, consider this scenario. "Ladies and gentlemen, I give you your new leader, the exceptionally powerful Lieutenant Jones." The place goes crazy. The troops hoo-ah themselves hoarse. They are ready and willing to follow that lieutenant to war right now. "Hoo-ah, Lieutenant!" What's the difference? The exceptionally powerful Lieutenant Jones takes care of her troops. She's careful. So how will you take care of your troops? If you'll recall, in Habit 3, Look Up, we talked about the power of saying good morning. That's one of the little things that produces big results. Let me give you four other parts of this puzzle. First, tell them what you expect. Remember, I just told you I respected my general so much because I knew what he expected of me. Most leaders assume that their followers know what they expect. Often, they hold their followers accountable for doing what they assumed their followers knew was expected of them, but never told them. Is that confusing or what? Try being in the middle of all that. I've been there, and it wasn't fun. The most powerful process I've found that will produce quantum positive results in dealing with expectations comes from Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He calls it the win-win agreement, which includes 5 general areas: desired results, what you expect; resources, what you have to work with, guidelines, rules of engagement, accountability, who's responsible for what, and consequences, what happens after success or failure. Key to that process is agreement. Both you and your troops agree to live up to the expectations in each area. When you both agree, that breeds discipline or discipleship for both parties. Another critical concept is to let your troops be creative. They have all kinds of ideas, so let them loose to share them with you. The win-win agreement process takes time, but the investment will bring huge returns. Second, know your troops. I didn't say go drink with them. Observe them. Listen to them. You know what that takes after having mastered habit two? Listen. Pay attention. Try to analyze their needs. Now, I'm not asking you to turn into a psychologist or anything like that. Just watch and learn. What are they interested in? How can you help them grow? Think of them as winners and help them reach the finish line first. They will love you and follow you anywhere. Here's an important lesson. This one's free. Your troops, with very few exceptions, will value their families more than anything else. Learn as much as you can about their families and how you can help them invest more time with their loved ones. I know that may not be easy, but if you're interested, really careful, they will appreciate and remember anything you do for them in that area of their lives. You see, taking care of work issues is easy compared to dealing with family issues. As the saying goes, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. If your troops are having family problems, they won't give you 100% at work. That's just how life is. So do what you can, even if it's not a lot, to help your troops take care of their families. If you do, they will go to war with you any day, any place. Third, humble yourself. Yeah, you're the lieutenant. At least in your mind, you're the boss. Get over it. You're still accountable, but you're not going to succeed unless your troops become your disciples. If you're cocky and try to impress them with your authority, you'll quickly find how lonely it can be at the top. I can remember getting so much more done than I was capable of doing only because I could humble myself and ask young troops for help. Man, the chief needs me? I'm there for him, they would say in their hearts. I'd then get out of the way and let them excel. I always gave them credit for their work when I got credit for the accomplishment. Never ask your troops to do more than you're willing to do. Lieutenant Hank Emerson was one of the best men I ever worked with. He was young and eager to be a good leader. He had one problem, though. He never asked his troops to do more than he was willing to do. Well, his problem was that he often did it for them. I remember the old chiefs admonishing him to let the troops do what they were supposed to do, what they were hired to do. Bless his heart, the lieutenant cared so much that he wanted to do their work for them and spare them the trouble. At the beginning of this paragraph, I said, never ask your troops to do more than you're willing to do. The lesson is, don't do it unless they need your help. If you're the only officer in the unit, your loneliness may try to overtake you. Your troops need to know that you're the leader. It's very difficult to lead from the trenches. As a new leader, you don't have enough experience to do that effectively. Be willing to help and get your hands dirty if you're needed, but don't make that a habit. Immature folks will try to take advantage of it, and you don't need that bombarding you. I hope this makes sense. It's a paradox, I know, but it's true. Humility is not the easiest virtue to embody. It takes a great deal of internal strength and a sense of purpose. If you are there to take care of your troops so that they can take care of the mission, you will excel because you will humble yourself to your purpose. If you're there to get promoted, watch out. Your troops will sense that in 8 seconds and will make life hell for you. I believe it was Ken Blanchard who said, "Humble people don't think less of themselves. They think of themselves less." Let me put it this way. You graduated from high school. For 4 or 5 years, you went to an academy or college where they taught you to be a leader. You may have some type of technical training. You're all of 22 years old. You get to your first assignment where you're put in charge of an E-9 who's been in service 30 years. Do you think you might get a very quick lesson in humility from that E-9? 22 years old? Man, I've got socks older than you. In fact, I'm wearing them right now. That's just the E-9. All the other troops you're now in charge of have been to war more times than you've been to the bathroom. Okay, that's probably an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. How are you going to lead those people? By following. By being humble. You'll learn more about that when you get to Habit 8. Humility is key to being an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. Last, be consistent in your attitude and behavior. According to Don Shula and Ken Blanchard, consistency is not behaving the same way all the time. It is behaving the same way in similar circumstances. I've always preferred to work with leaders who were consistent. I could always count on how they would respond to what I did. Even those who were consistently negative were easier to work with than those who kept me guessing. My sense is that those who kept me guessing had no clear sense of purpose, nor did they practice humility. You should know by now that I would never advocate negative behavior of any type. So, be consistently positive, and you will get consistently positive results. That's how life works. I guess that goes back to Habit 3 and having a positive attitude, doesn't it? You'll find that all of these habits intertwine to make you a total person leader. Chief Seattle of the Suquamish and Duwamish Native American tribes said in 1854 that all things are connected. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons of the earth. Man did not weave the web of life. He is merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself. Those words tell me that what we do on a daily basis affects our world in profound ways. So the best thing we can do is understand that the people around us are more important than we are. The most exceptionally powerful people are humble. Humility is about being careful, putting others first. When we do, others will put us first. It's the circle of life. I used to tell newcomers to my unit that they had to follow 2 rules. 1, take care of the chief. And 2, the chief will take care of you. In truth, those rules worked backward, but they didn't have to know that. If you take care of the troops, they will take care of the mission, and they will take care of you. They will know how much you care by what you say, what you think, what you do, and how you do it. So be careful. War Story. My lovely bride of 28 wonderful and fulfilling years, the number increases each year, by the way, and I were married on 28 January 1978. Please feel free to send gifts on that day, or any other day, for that matter. By the end of February of that year, I was at Clark Air Base, AB, in the Philippines. We hadn't had time to get her passport, so she had to stay home in Charlotte, North Carolina, with her parents until she got her documents. I did all I could to expedite the process, but I was a young staff sergeant at the time and rather naive about how things worked, so I wasn't very successful. Hold on. Let me go back a little. In November of 1977, my mom contracted Guillain-Barré syndrome, a type of polio that almost killed her, hospitalizing her for many months. I found out about Mom's illness just after I'd gotten orders for reassignment to the Air Force Band of the Pacific at Clark AB. Because I had a report date of February 1978, I immediately asked that it be changed so I could be sure of her recovery before I went across the pond, as we old guys say. My gaining unit commander denied the request because I was needed on a band tour since I was the only bassoonist. Good warrior that I was, I left my mom in the hospital and my bride at home awaiting a passport and proceeded to my new duty station in the Philippines. After I made all kinds of calls and asked everyone I knew, including my commander, for help, who, by the way, never did, Mom got out of the hospital, and Deb got her papers. I was relieved that Mom survived, although she has never been able to walk since, and excited that Deb could join me. I worked hard to make arrangements for her to fly to Clark, but I ran into a glitch. The only available flights would arrive during the time we would be on the tour for which I was so desperately needed. During the negotiations for changing my arrival date, the commander had fixed the band orchestrations so that another instrument covered my parts, as a precaution, I suppose. In other words, I really wasn't needed on that tour anymore. You can imagine how I felt, having left Mom in the hospital so that I could do my duty, which, in the end, wasn't critical. Under the circumstances, I asked to be left behind so that I could pick up my new bride at the airport and set up our household. You know, all the typical things that have to be done when you get to a new assignment. The answer, to my surprise, was no. I had to go on the tour. I went and didn't do much, but I was there. Deb had to wait another month to join me. Again, can you imagine how I felt? Do you think I was a gung-ho warrior at that time? I'm not bitter now, but I was then. Why? My commander was not careful. I never got to talk with him. The E-9 we had in the unit was the only person who gave me an audience, but he didn't care either. I never understood why they had made their decisions, and they never tried to explain them. I suppose they didn't have to, but they certainly would have gotten more out of me if they had. One of the good things about military life is that everything changes when a new commander comes in, every 2 years or so. Or does it? The commander and E-9, who had no idea how to be careful, were reassigned, and two new people took command. Hoo-ah! I thought. I'll admit they were more careful than the previous regime, but something happened that I hope you will never allow, although I see it in units to this day. You have to stop it. Let me explain. As I said earlier, I was a naive staff sergeant just doing my job, but I was a hard worker, so I deserved to be promoted. And I got promoted, although I almost didn't know it. Here's what happened. Deb and I were at the park in the housing compound where we lived. For some reason, ironically, I hadn't gone on this particular band tour. The band had just returned, and at the park, I happened to see the E-8, the one who had replaced the previous E-9, since he lived in our housing area. After the usual salutations, He said, "By the way, congratulations." "Congratulations." "On what?" "On your promotion." "What promotion?" "To tech sergeant." "Didn't anyone tell you?" Obviously, the answer was no. No one had told me. Deb and I should have been jumping for joy, I suppose, since it was good news. We were more confused than elated, though. That was not exactly the best way to learn about a promotion. There are two lessons here. First, as I said before, your troops' families will almost always be the highest priority in their lives. If you help them take care of their families, they will do anything you ask of them, and more. I certainly would have been more productive at that Philippines assignment if I'd trusted my leaders to take care of my family. In truth, you would have had to shoot me to go to war voluntarily with any of those men. Second, you'll have to do some unpleasant things in your duty as a commander, too many of them. One of the few good things you'll do is promote your troops. That should be a momentous event. When your troops get promoted, find them, no matter where they are, and present them their new stripes. If they have family and you can include them, do it. Promotion is the acknowledgement of value. We all want to be valued. I know you've heard that before. The small things you do every day to express how you value your troops are incredibly powerful, but a promotion is the institution's formal way of expressing its respect and trust in a warrior. It should be an unforgettable event, a positive, unforgettable event. I guarantee you that we all remember every one of our promotions, and we remember who was in command. If you're careful, you'll spend less time being careful because you'll have a team of experienced, knowledgeable, caring warriors around you doing all they can to help you become an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. Bonus war story. As I put the finishing touches on this book, something happened that led me to add this story. Ronald Reagan, former President of the United States, passed away. Put political differences aside for a minute, and listen to this because I think it further validates my point about being careful. As I previously mentioned, I served in several Air Force bands. Most, unfortunately, don't exist anymore. While serving with the Air Force Band of the Golden West, stationed at March Air Force Base in California, we had many opportunities to play for President Reagan at various high-level events. Evidently, he liked us because after he retired to the Los Angeles area, he called us to come visit him so that he could thank us for what we'd done for him while he was in office. Now think on that a little bit. A former president of the United States summoning members of an Air Force band to his office to thank them. That in itself is being careful. He didn't have to do it, but he did. We took advantage of the invitation and went to his office one bright sunny day. It's always bright and sunny in California. What an exciting time! The president invested more than an hour with us, joking around and telling stories. What a great storyteller. We all had our pictures taken with him. I have mine proudly displayed in my office, if you'd like to come by and see it. Apparently, his next appointment was some golf tournament. He was dressed casually since he had to go to the course right after talking with us. I was the second to last person to be photographed with him. My commander was last. I'd trained him. As we finished taking the photos, one of the president's aides came in and admonished him that he needed to hurry to get to his next commitment. The president acknowledged the remark, but finished the photos. Again, he could have apologized and rushed off with his aide, but he stayed with us until we were all done. I had brought my copy of An American Life, the president's autobiography, to be autographed. We hadn't had time for that, however, so as we were being led out of his office, I asked another aide at a desk near the door if she would please ask the president to autograph my book, and I would gladly leave enough money with her to cover the postage to mail it to me. Although President Reagan was being escorted out another door, he stopped, having overheard my conversation. He told the aide with him to get my book, signed it, had his aide return it to me, and then went on his way. Did he have to do that? Of course not. But he did. He cared enough to stop what he was doing to take care of someone he didn't know very well, but respected. He even remembered my name, and, most importantly, my rank. He signed it to Chief Bob Vasquez, with best wishes, Ronald Reagan, May 17th, 93. You're welcome to come see my book as well. I won't let you touch it, but you can see it. Many people loved President Reagan. Even more respected him. Surely history will remember what he did for the country, but the people he touched will always remember him for how he treated them. He was careful. I would have gone to war with him at any time, any place. God bless you, Mr. President. Starting points. What do I know about my troops' families? Do my troops know what I expect of them? Do I practice humility? Am I taking care of my troops, or am I just saying it? Words of wisdom. There are two ways of exerting one's strength, pushing down or pulling up. Booker T. Washington. The greatest carver does the least cutting. Tao Te Ching. Always do your best. What you plant now, you will harvest later. Og Mandino. It's important that people know what you stand for. It's equally important that they know what you won't stand for. Mary H. Waldrop. People will sit up and take notice of you if you will sit up and take notice of what makes them sit up and take notice. Frank Romer. We shall never know all the good that a simple smile can do. Mother Teresa. A desk is a dangerous place from which to watch the world. John Le Carre. Never tell people how to do things. Tell them what to do and they'll surprise you with their ingenuity. General George S. Patton. 5. Habit 5. Sharpen the sword. Take care of yourself first. A lieutenant is a leader. A lieutenant leads warriors. A lieutenant is a warrior. We use the term warrior extensively in the military, but what exactly is a warrior? A typical dictionary definition of the word is one engaged or experienced in battle. I'm not sure how much experience you have in battle, but you're certainly engaged in one. Before you start hoo-ah-ing, let me ask you this. Where is the greatest battle in your life? Is it not inside you? Isn't making yourself do what you should do a continuous battle? If it's not, you're really the exception. We'll have you canonized as soon as you die. The biggest battle most of us will ever fight is the internal one. Joseph Campbell, American writer on mythology and comparative religion, talked about the dragon within when he referred to a person's daily internal struggles. What would it take to slay that dragon within? Wouldn't it help to have a sharp sword? Where do you find that weapon? The sword is within you. I'll soon tell you how to keep it sharpened. First, let me ask you a few more questions. Have you ever known someone who seemed tired all the time? Maybe that person was someone you avoided because he or she was always moody and hard to get along with. Have you ever heard of someone who was on the fast track to success but burned out instead? A better question might be, are you that someone? If you have ever suffered burnout, you need to develop and hone the habit I discuss here. And you need to start now. In Habit 4, I told you about the value of selflessness, the importance of serving others by being careful. So you might think I'm being duplicitous when I tell you to make a habit of taking care of yourself first. This notion may go against every leadership lesson you've ever learned, but it's the truth. I would never lie to you. Okay, unless it was for your own good. Here's the deal. Although serving others is key to being an effective leader, truthfully, what good are you if you're not around? How effective are you when you're ill? Can you hang with the troops when you're worn out? Do they perceive you as an effective leader when you're not in tune with what's happening in your environment or your specialty? When you're having a bad day, does it affect those around you? How inspiring can you be when you're not inspired yourself? Surely you've taken a flight on a commercial airline. During the safety briefing, the flight attendant will get to the part about the little yellow oxygen cup coming down in front of you in case the plane loses altitude quickly. The attendant's message is to don the mask first, take care of your kids, and then breathe normally. Breathe normally. Yeah, right. If that little yellow cup comes down in front of me, my first reaction will be to breathe as fast as I can. It's somehow associated with Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Survival is the first need. Now, assuming I even remember that my wife and kids are with me on that flight, I'll certainly make sure they have their masks on, too. My gut tells me that this is an especially difficult concept for moms. Dads are from the old school. I brought you into this life, and I'll take you out. More on that later. Moms will sacrifice everything for their children. Men think, hey, we'll just have more. Okay, not really. Okay, maybe. Anyway, the idea of taking care of yourself first is credible in this situation. It probably won't take you long to don the mask. If that's the only way to breathe, you'll do it with incredible speed. Rather than encouraging us to breathe normally, I think that the attendant really wants to keep us from panicking. That's one of the vital things you learn in CPR classes. Don't panic. Emotional minds cause panic. Once it takes over, you can't think logically, and the fight or flight instinct assumes control. Not a good thing. If you take care of yourself and don't panic, doesn't it make sense that you'll be able to assess what's going on a little bit better and make the right decisions? Then you'll be able to take care of others. I think so. Serving others begins with serving yourself. Your life includes four basic areas: physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. If you're going to serve others, you have to be healthy in those areas. Again, take care of yourself first, and then you can serve others. Let me break it down for you. First, let's talk about physical fitness. How important is it? Of course, you know you have to take care of your body as long as you're in it. When you're not in it anymore, don't worry about it. For several years now, Americans have been on a health kick. Still, we have ungodly numbers of people dying from heart attacks and strokes. The number of obese people increases continuously. Something's not right there, don't you think? Perhaps it's the New Year resolution syndrome. Have you ever noticed that you can hardly get into the gym during the months of January, February, and March? By April, you can walk in any time because it's almost empty. My biggest problem with maintaining physical fitness isn't so much that I don't have a program. It's that I won't stick with it consistently. Is physical fitness important to taking care of yourself? Of course it is. What does it consist of? Most of us quickly develop the vision of looking like rapper LL Cool J or singer Jessica Simpson. LL for the men and Jessica for the women, of course. That's okay if you have the time and can make a commitment to it. But do you know what it takes to look like that? A lot of work. Most of us aren't willing to make that investment, but we still want those results. It won't happen. But you can maintain your health and even retain your girlish figure if you work at it consistently. For years, physical fitness experts have told us that maintaining our hearts in good working condition requires only 20 minutes of aerobic exercise a day, 3 times a week. 20 minutes, 3 times a week. If my ciphering is correct, that's 1 hour per week. Do you know how many hours there are in a week? 168. Trust me, I did the math. Is it worth investing 1/168th of your time to increase your lifespan? If it increased by only 1 day, would it not be worth it? Well, yeah, but... Now get off your butts. But I don't have time. But I can't. But my shoes are too old. Which butt do you normally prefer? I'm not talking about lifting hundreds of pounds at the gym, but if that's what cranks your motor, great. Do it. All I'm talking about, at a minimum, is taking a brisk walk for 20 minutes. Imagine. You're behind that computer you love, replying to every single email for hours on end. Wouldn't it be nice to get up and take a walk for 20 minutes? If you did that twice a day, wouldn't you feel better and possibly increase your lifespan? Simple stuff. All you need is a place to do it. Outdoors is great, but the mall will work too, and a pair of walking shoes. Part of our problem, I think, is that we want to look cool while we're exercising, and that becomes the priority. I have a whole chapter on that. You'll have to wait for the next book. You don't have to look cool to be healthy. That will come later when you are healthy. The other part of physical fitness has to do with diet. I'll tell you now, this is the most difficult area of my life. I'd rather work out an hour a day every day than to give up the foods I like. I suppose it's better to strike a balance, whatever that is. A balanced diet is not a Big Mac in each hand. Again, you know the importance of not eating too much fat, eating whole grains, and drinking plenty of water. But I'm not an expert by any means. Get a good book that will help you eat sensibly, and not too much. I can't tell you how many times we Air Force bandsmen would go to a performance site after we'd had dinner only to find food set up for us. Although we'd just eaten, this food was free, man. Kids in Africa are starving, so how could we possibly waste free food? Luckily, most of our concerts were of a lighter vein. Hey, I'm trying to keep you awake here. The point is that diet is critical to physical fitness. Learn that before you have a heart attack and you'll be much better off. Another part of physical fitness has to do with the amount of rest we get regularly. I remember a TV commercial which professed that the best never rest. Yeah, well, they die young. The body is not constructed to work 24/7. We often think we can work that hard, but it ain't so. It needs to replenish its resources. Myriad studies conclude that if a person doesn't get enough rest, he or she will break down psychologically as well as physically. I know there's not enough time to do all you're asked to do, but if you don't rest, you'll eventually do nothing for a lot longer. Get plenty of rest and make sure your troops do the same, or else. The or else will manifest itself in illness, weakness, and fatigue, all of which can compromise the mission. You know it's true. Second, let's consider the mental area of your life. Let me add that maintaining physical fitness has an effect on our mental well-being. I recall that for most of my military life, I was told, "We don't pay you to think, we pay you to do." Maybe 100 years ago, 20 in military years, that might have been the case. Now, with technology changing our world every day, you and your troops have to think. Our military suffers in two areas: not thinking, and when we do, what we think about. Imagine walking down the hallway of your duty section, only to find a young troop sitting there doing nothing. I mean, he's just sitting there, doing nothing. "Ha! I'm a lieutenant. I'll fix that." "Young man, if you have nothing to do, let me find you something." You say, "Hey, I've been there, done that." You feel much better, don't you? Well, maybe you shouldn't. Is it possible that that young person was thinking? Is it possible that he or she was this close to coming up with a better way to perform your mission? Is it possible? You'll never know now, will you? How is it that we improve anything in our lives? Is it not through thinking? Someone, not you, thinks of a better way. Usually it happens on the fly. Imagine if you and your troops made time to think of new ways to do things. Regarding what you think about, I tell you, if you don't get your troops to sit down and think about something specific, they'll think about everything else. Have you ever asked one of your troops or yourself, "What were you thinking?" It's usually after they or you do something wrong that you ask that question. You do pay your troops to think, and you have to train them to do so. So, how do you exercise the mind? There are plenty of ways, but if you can't think of any, I have some suggestions. Reading, for one. Leaders are readers. The problem with reading is that it takes time. None of us has time to read. We have to make time. You make time for watching Survivor, don't you? As with physical fitness, I'm not suggesting that you read War and Peace. Make 20 minutes available each day to read books about your favorite subjects, hobbies, or work. You might find some peace of mind. You might even learn something. The more you do it, the better you'll get at it. Read and learn. As you do it, your troops will see you and know that you value learning. Hone your skills. More on that in the next habit, but suffice it to say that you can always find interesting classes to attend. Oh, I know, you're always on the road, the ops tempo is a killer, and the dog eats your homework. What do you produce when you rationalize? Rational lies. Get over it. As Hannibal said to his troops, "We shall find a way or make one," or something like that. Hey, I wasn't there. My point is that we have the means to do most anything nowadays. Technology connects us with people around the world. If you want to learn more about your profession, you can find a way to do so. Continue to learn. Listening is an inexpensive way of exercising the mind. I already taught you how. Now practice it. knowing but not doing is not knowing. Take what you read about in Habit 2 and practice it daily. You may be amazed at what you can learn when you listen. Take that learning and use it to accomplish your mission of either doing your job better or taking care of your troops better. You'll improve your mental health as well as the health of your troops. I'm going to sound duplicitous again, but when you take care of the troops, they'll take care of you. Don't waste your brain. Feed it daily. Third, you must hone your emotional life if you're going to lead anyone. The first person you lead is you. I barely recall, about 2 centuries ago, the movie The Greatest about Muhammad Ali. Not the new version starring Will Smith, but the real one. The lyrics of the theme song, Greatest Love of All, later recorded by Whitney Houston, referred to the greatest love of all as the love for oneself. At the time, I thought, how selfish. As I matured, not aged, I came to realize that loving oneself is the first step to emotional stability. One cannot give what one does not have. Wow, I hope I just made that up. If you don't love yourself, how can you love anyone else? It's impossible. Life is about relationships. We often work on developing relationships with others. We also have to maintain a relationship with ourselves. I hope you never have the experience of being around someone who's suicidal. When you become a commander, you'll probably have to deal with this situation in some way. Suicidal people have absolutely no love for themselves, and they will bring everyone around them down emotionally. You've been to those suicide prevention briefings every year, but they never get to the real cause, the lack of self-love. The only way to help those who don't love themselves is to love them until they do. That's not easy, but it's the truth. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting going to extremes, such as becoming narcissistic, but the ego must be strong, not big, for you to do what you have to do, and that comes from self-confidence, self-esteem, and self-love. Then you can share that love. In fact, I believe it happens almost naturally. Okay, let's talk about the L word. I know it's touchy-feely. But the most important things in your life are touchy-feely, aren't they? More on that later. What's most important to you? If you don't say family, you're probably reading this around your buddies. I'll wait for you to be alone, and then you'll say family. What keeps a family together? It's love, man. John and Paul were right. All you need is love. Keep in mind there's a huge difference between love and lust. To put it in simple GI terms, love is unconditional giving. Lust is selfish wanting. Easy enough? Every relationship can be measured by the amount of love shared. Think about it. Yes, now I'm asking you to practice what I preach. Your relationship with another person is strong because you're willing to give him or her all you can, all you have. You're willing to give without the condition that he or she give back to you. That's love, and there's incredible power in that. As I write this, my heart is saddened by the overwhelming number of our soldiers being killed in Iraq. Having been a warrior all of my adult life, I know that a soldier, airman, sailor, marine, or coast guardsman can do what is expected only through the strength gained from love of country, family, and fellow warriors. What can a person who puts his or her life on the line expect in return? Money? That's silly, isn't it? By now, you should realize that you're in this not for the money or prestige, but because you love what you do and who you do it for. It's about relationships, It's about love. Last of all, the most important part of your life is spiritual. Interestingly, when you've taken care of the physical, mental, and emotional areas, you'll find a sense of peace that empowers you to think beyond yourself. Maslow called it self-transcendence. It goes beyond self-actualization. I call it spiritual. Often, people misconstrue spirituality with religion. It's not necessarily the same. If religion is the way by which you develop your spiritual life, then hallelujah. If it's not, don't worry about it. To me, spirituality is about opening your mind and your heart to appreciate all that abounds around you. I currently live in Colorado, near Pikes Peak. Every morning, I drive toward the west and get a glimpse of a giant postcard. I see what Catherine Lee Bates saw when she wrote the lyrics to America the Beautiful, from a different angle, of course. The mountains really are purple, and they are majestic. Paradoxically, one of the most effective ways to get to the spiritual is to appreciate the natural. Go outside, whether in the sunshine or the snow, and listen and observe. Hear the birds or the wind. Feel the breeze. Nature will astound you with its beauty if you pay attention. Another way to develop your spirituality is by thinking, there I go again, using the T word, about the value of the people with whom you live and work. Time has changed the risks of living in this world. There is a possibility, not a probability, I hope, that all of those people with whom you live and work, and possibly those you love, could get killed as you read this passage. God forbid, but the possibility does exist. We are not as safe as we used to be. Imagine, again, God forbid, that your friends or family were all killed. How would you feel? Would that not put you in a spiritual frame of mind? Surely we don't know what we'd do if a catastrophe like that befell us. In truth, we do know what we should do to express our appreciation and love for those with whom we share our lives. We often choose not to because we don't exercise our spirit. You can change that today, right now. I hope you'll practice this habit daily. It will affect you, and it will affect those with whom you live. If you choose to do nothing else I've commended to you, work on this habit. It will increase your lifespan, and it will give you peace. Take care of yourself so that you can take care of others who, in turn, will take care of you. Developing and maintaining these four basic areas of your life are critical to your ability to lead warriors. You have to have a sharp weapon. Denise Austin, the fitness guru, said it best. Health is wealth. Get rich. Take care of yourself first. End of Disc 2. This book is continued on Disc 3.